व्रज जनरंजन जामुन श्रावण शरी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी राधा माधव जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज कचर्य आशुतोष शतश्री श्रीमार शिवायंगे शिल प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराज में भाव सम की गौ प्रेमनंदी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द सुमन डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगा ओम ज्ञानतिमिरान्दश्च ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोऽभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामायं ददाति स्वाभरन्तिकं वञ्चाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यरेव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Canto 6, Chapter 4, Text 12. Tokanam pitarau bandhu Drisha pakshma striyapati Pati prajanam bhikshunam Grihyaknanam buddha surit Tokanam pitarau bandhu Triyapati Tokanam of children, Pitarau, the two parents, Bandhu, the friends, Drisha, of the eye, Pakshma, the eyelid, Striyaha, of the woman, Pati, the husband, Pati, the protector, Prajanam, of the subjects, Bhikshunam, of the beggars, Grihi, the householder, Ajnanam of the ignorant, Buddha, the learned, Suhrit, the friend. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As a father and mother are the friends and maintainers of their children. One example. As the eyelid is the protector of the eye. Two examples. As the husband is the maintainer and protector of a woman. Three examples. As the householder is the maintainer and protector of beggars. Four. And as the learned is the friend of the ignorant. Five. So the king is the protector and giver of the life to all his subjects. That's not a sixth example. That's being compared to that. The trees are also subjects of the king, therefore they should be given protection. Purport. By the supreme will of the personality of Godhead, there are various protectors and maintainers for helpless living entities. The trees are also considered prajas, subjects of the king, and therefore the duty of the monarch is to protect even the trees, not to speak of others. The king is duty-bound to protect the living entities in his kingdom. Thus, although the parents are directly responsible for the protection and maintenance of their children, the duty of the king is to see that all parents do their duty properly. How they manage to do so is inconceivable. So many living entities, how do you say, find out if they're doing their duty properly or not? Similarly, the king is also responsible for overseeing the other protectors mentioned in this verse. It may also be noted that the beggars who should be maintained by the householder are not professional beggars, but sannyasis and brahmanas, to whom the householder should supply food and clothing. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Soma is trying to pacify the prachetas. We've heard this already. And amongst kshatriyas, there are four types of pacification. And there are four types of pacification in kshatriya diplomacy. Understand? Four types. First type is called Sama. Second type is called Dana. Third type is called Beta. Fourth type is called Danda. Understand? Danda, everyone can understand Danda. It's chastisement. There are four types of pacification and Kshatriya diplomacy. Sama, Dana, Beta, Danda. Sama means political conciliation. Political conciliation for these great souls, they're all Rajarishis, they're great personalities. So usually their political conciliation consists of philosophical understanding of reality. So that's what we're hearing now from Soma as he's addressing the Prachetas, is a philosophical understanding of reality to resolve or come to some harmonizing position with the Prachetas. Understand? It means, first type Soma means some sort of political conciliation. These are all great rishi, so you see them doing philosophical understanding. Do you see an example of this in Krishna book with Vasudev trying to pacify Kamsa, isn't it? Then with Kamsa, first type of conciliation he uses is Sama. He tries to give some philosophical understanding of reality. Death is coming for all. Why are you afraid of death? And so on. You recall this example? You recall Krishna book? Have you read Krishna book? You read, you don't recall, so you can read. So this first type of conciliation. Second type is called as danda. Danda means to give some charity, some political sacrifice that they will be pacified with. Usually this one works pretty effectively. Charity, gift giving. Everyone likes gifts, isn't it? With in the case of Vasudeva and Krishna book, when Kamsa could not be pacified by all the philosophical discourse, finally, he offers some charity. I'll just give my eighth child to you. Then he becomes pacified, isn't it? This is called dana. Dana means to give in charity, some type of political sacrifice. Understand? Then third type is called as beta. The word beta literally means separation. And this type of conciliation, or this type of diplomacy, tries to demonstrate what will be the consequences of your actions in order to dissuade you from doing so. It's called beta, so it means separation, understand? So like Vasudev, he tries to point out to Kamsa that if you do like this, you kill your own sister. What a demon, huh? If you kill your own sister, then your you will become infamous. No one will respect you. And you are a great Kshatriya. To lose your respect is worse than death. And then he tries to, this is a beta, a type of consequence of improper action in order to dissuade someone from doing an action. And finally, if all else fails, chastisement. Understand? All else fails, you chastise. Danda. In the case of the Pandavas, these types of pacification were used in order to pacify Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. But finally, they cannot be pacified, so it came to the fourth type, danda, chastisement. So that was the war of Kurukshetra. Understand? So these are four types of Kshatriya diplomacy for pacifying the other party. Understand? Four types. So that's what we're hearing about in this section. Soma is trying to pacify the Prachetas, and he's using one of these methods. Danda, he doesn't have to come to Danda, because the charity ends up working, as it often does. So in today's verse, he is giving Sama. This is Sama, philosophical discourse, some political conciliation. He is saying that the king is the protector of the Prajas. The Prajas consist of everything in the kingdom, literally. Every living entity in the kingdom is called a Praja. So whether the living entity is in the body of a tree, or the body of an animal, the body of an insect, or a reptile, or a bird, or in the body of a human being, and that too, amongst the human beings, the bodies of the outcasts, the bodies of the brahmanas, the king sees all of them equally as his praja. Praja means that he has to give protection to them. He is the protector of those praja. So the trees also living entities, so they also are citizens of the kingdom. How far out is that? This brings the tree huggers, to shame. For outlook, they go around hugging trees. They say they love the trees, which is commendable. But such was the training of these great monarchs that they saw all living entities as their children, worthy of their protection, their praja. Such was the broad-mindedness. How broad-minded you have to be to see in this way. Such was the training of Kshatriyas of that time. Nowadays, in modern families of government, they only care about their families. So they perform many criminal activities, violence towards other living entities for the sake of their own families, isn't it? This is why persons who aren't trained properly in spiritual principles should not be leaders, because leaders have to be the most broad-minded, because everyone is their children, so to speak, or they are the guardians of everyone, so they have to be trained. But the modern political leaders, they don't have such training. So they're willing to perform violence towards other living entities for the sake of their own children, so to speak, their own families. And therefore, you have Prabhupada saying statements like, the whole world is controlled by a few families only, a few demoniac families who perform demoniac activities for the sake of their own families. But the training in the olden days was that all were seen as your praja. So he's meant to give protection to the trees, our living entities within his kingdom. Therefore, he's meant to protect them also, as he's meant to protect anyone else in the kingdom. And he is to see the king, Prabhupada's purport, is to see to it that those who are also guardians of others are performing their duties properly. So that is also an aspect of his protection of everyone. There are others who may be direct guardians of certain individuals, such as the parents who are the guardians of their children. That example has been given here. And the king's duty was to see that the parents were performing that responsibility. Like I mentioned, I don't know how that is conceivably possible to know. I guess back in the day, if you didn't perform your duties properly, someone would just trick off on you. And then, you know this language, trick off on you? Trick off, you never heard? You never heard like this. This must be a black thing, huh? So yeah, tell, trick off means to tattletale. Everyone's heard of tattletale before? So I guess if you didn't perform your duty properly, they used to just tattletale on you. Because the mode of goodness is high in those days. The mode of goodness is high, so everyone has a very high sense of responsibility. Unlike the age of Kali, which the mode of ignorance is most prominent. So because of the influence of the mode of goodness, if you weren't performing your responsibilities properly, probably someone would tattletale on you. Because they felt it was their duty to inform the monarch, those who are responsible, that this is not being performed properly. And that's going to percolate throughout the whole community. If one person doesn't perform their function properly, then everyone's got to suffer for it, right? It's just like the different limbs of the body. They have to work together to take care of the body. So if the legs decide, today I'm not going to work, then that causes a problem for the whole body, isn't it? The leg said, "Today I will not work today." Now, when it's time for Mangala Arati, we might not mind that because we want to stay in the bed and we can just say, "My legs aren't working today. They've decided not to work." But it causes a problem for the whole body. So similarly, in the social body, if all the various angas of that social body, if any one of them becomes incompetent or irresponsible, then it's going to affect the whole social body. So properly, they would inform the king of some irresponsible actions, and the king will have to see to it that was corrected. Such was his duty. The Prabhupada's first sentence is here, is that by the supreme will of the personality of Godhead, there are various protectors and maintainers for helpless living entities. I like that sentence a lot because we hear this just as one living entity is food for another, and that is due to the law of nature. Sometimes people have a idealistic sense that they will perform no violence towards any living entities. But the way material nature is designed is that one living entity is food for another. That's just by design. So even for entities who are vegetarian, such as human beings and cows and so on, they still depend on plants and agriculture and so on, which are also living entities, for their survival. Sometimes people try to, those who are attached to eating meat, sometimes they argue, "Well, you're also eating living entities," to which we should say that is true. But we're eating according to the laws of nature, not outside the laws of nature, the laws of God, in other words. So anyway, that's a side point. The point is that just as living entities are food for other living entities, so also by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, certain living entities are protectors for other living entities. But it's in their blood, so to speak. It's in their nature. So by design, Krishna has generated a type of living entity called the Kshatriya, for example, who has the nature of wanting to protect others from violence. The word Kshatriya, in fact, means that one who protects others from violence. That's what the meaning of Kshatriya is. And Krishna has designed it by that, by nature. So then through those living entities, Krishna gives protection to other helpless living entities. That is all part of the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. Of course, in human life, the basis of that nature being used responsibly, because just as a Kshatriya can protect from violence, a Kshatriya could cause violence also. So then the way that works in human society is that there's the laws of God that govern everyone. And so the laws of God will show how that nature is to be properly employed in relationship to himself. So by the arrangement of the Lord, through his Maya Shakti, and also through the injunctions of the Shastras, one living entity is the guardian for another. And the Kshatriya's duty is to see to it that he performs his function of protecting all the praja, and seeing to it that those who are guardians for others directly are also performing their duties properly. In that way, and so then five examples are given here to demonstrate that, just as the eyelid protects the eye, yes, and just as the learned protect the ignorant, or are friendly to the ignorant. Just like, how many of you were the ignorant in school? Anyone here was the ignorant in school? Yes, me also. He was the learned. I'm straight A student. Yes, everyone. He was a straight A student. So then I remember when I was in school, the learned were the friends of the ignorant. So when you didn't understand anything, you will get someone who was learning as your tutor, isn't it? You get someone who was learning as your tutor, because the learned are the friend of the ignorant. In other words, it's their duty, because they have knowledge, to protect those who are without knowledge by trying to properly educate them according to their capacity. So that's two examples. Another example is just as the parents protect their children. Another example is just as the husband protects their wife. Obviously, this is Vedic culture. Things are a little bit different now, but... And the same way that these persons protect their dependents, so also you are to protect the praja, which includes the trees. So in this way, he's offering some philosophical understanding of reality, of the nature of reality, in order to pacify the anger of the prachetas. It isn't going to work, but it was a good point, nonetheless. Any questions about this particular point? Any? Yes. Oh, you have something. I think Alex has something then, Terrence.
Hare Krishna. So you're saying the knowledge, they are friends of those who are in ignorance. So sometimes, you know, people, they might know something that maybe a few person know, and they don't really like to share that. mean, you know, because if I'm gonna share, everybody will be like me or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I don't want any
So by keeping
competitors.
that knowledge, yeah, they kind of, you know, feel more
Yeah, they keep
knowledge.
their if they if someone is learning and they don't share their knowledge with those who are ignorant, that constitutes a fault or that constitutes an irresponsible action on their part, which there will be consequences for that. In the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that if learned brahmanas and so on, and they don't share their knowledge, then that knowledge leaks out like water in a cracked clay pot. So if there's a clay pot is there and there's a slight crack in it, then gradually all the water leaks out. It may not leak out immediately, but it gradually leaks out. So similarly, those who have knowledge of truth, if they don't share that knowledge with those who are without such knowledge, then gradually that knowledge will leak out and they'll become bereft of understanding, which is the nature of reality. Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta says that the absolute truth tends to be eclipsed for those who do not vibrate Hari Katha. So yesterday a devotee was asking me how to remain enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness. I said you should vibrate Hari Katha to someone. In one sense, the more the merrier, but at least amongst devotees, when we're speaking Krishna consciousness to one another, according to our understanding, then the absolute truth remains vibrant and like the shining sun. The shining sun, the absolute truth remains vibrant in one's mind and heart. But if he does not vibrate Hari Katha, then that sun of the absolute truth becomes eclipsed. That's Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta's statement. And then of course, if the absolute truth becomes eclipsed, then our enthusiasm wanes along with the covering of the sun of the absolute truth. So in this way, those who have knowledge are meant to, by design, by the injunctions of the Vedas, and by nature also, their nature also is to share Hari Katha. That's actually, like I mentioned for the Kshatriyas, Krishna has inbuilt certain natures into the material existence. And so by nature, a person who has knowledge wants to share that. And so only out of envy will he not want to share that because he doesn't want any competitors, so to speak. And that envy actually constitutes something that's against his nature. But because there's an influence of the lower modes of nature, he becomes envious, he doesn't share that. So he acts against his nature by not sharing that wisdom. And that constitutes irresponsible action, and there are consequences for such irresponsible behavior. Like that. Yes. Well, Terrence had a question. Do you still have a question? Shiny.
Going back to Alex's point that he just made, from a different, I guess, spectrum, there are devotees who are very learned and they're sastrically proven to understand scriptures, but with actual preaching, it always doesn't have the potency to affect someone to like give them a change of heart to try to help them improve on their spiritual life. And there are also devotees who may not be as learned, but who imbibe the understanding of the shastras, and they're able to influence others just from their actions and also their words. It motivates people spiritually. So my question, in essence, is how does one imbibe the mood of what we're speaking about? But maybe they're not so inclined to just the you know, the scriptural studying, but they want to imbibe that mood and also
Oh,
affect others.
okay.
And
For one thing, everyone has to minimally hear the shastras. So someone may not be inclined towards study, systematic study, that's more of a brahminical nature. So it's a different type of nature, someone who can be inclined towards study. But then for the rest of the society, they have to hear from such learned persons, right? Otherwise, how they will imbibe the essence? On what basis do they understood that they have imbibed the essence unless they've heard from the shastras what the essence is? It's not like you can just concoct what the essence is. Or you find someone who's doing some activity that may be motivational, and you may call that motivation a spiritual motivation. But how do you know unless you have some basis of understanding, right? Just like nowadays, you're going to the modern society, And you'll meet so many people who say they're spiritual but not religious. Well, what is the basis of that understanding, that they're spiritual? What is their, the basis is their own minds. So, and then you could ask them, well, what do you mean by spiritual? And they all give their different understandings of what that means to them. Well, this is what it means to me. Well, how do you know that's what spiritual is? Well, it is to me. And that's what's important. So then if you have no basis for understanding, then on what basis do you say that my motivation is spiritual or that I've even imbibed the essence? So you need some basis there. So the basis for Vaishnavas, of course, is the Vedas. So you have to know what the Vedas are saying to know that your motivation is spiritual and to know that you've actually imbibed the essence. So if you're not inclined towards study of those things, you have to at least hear them from someone who knows what those essences are and who can speak them, who can educate you on what those are. So that's the first point. So someone may not, your point is they may know the shastras but don't have the potency to, you know, inspire people spiritually. But I would have to edit that because I would, or at least I find that somewhat suspect, because if they know the shastra, and they, maybe they're not empowered to inspire people, but then the question comes up, what are people inspired by? Because if a person is in the lower modes of nature, for example, if they're in passion, ignorance, then they're not going to be inspired by a very edified mode of goodness presentation, generally speaking. Now, that's a kind of a general point. So someone's like rock and roll, for example. He's a very passionate individual. He's into rock and roll and so on. So he comes to the temple and he sees like a rock and roll sort of kirtan. Now, let's say B.B. Govinda Maharaj's kirtan. So he comes to the beginning of the kirtan. It's like this deep, like meditative, Hare Krishna. He's like, oh my God, this is miserable. How can these people, because he's in the mode of passion. And then when he comes to the end of the kirtan where Maharaj is, you know, hitting the cartels like this and everyone's just going mad. And he's like, now this is what I'm talking about. This is spiritual. Now what is the basis of his analysis? He's in the mode of passion. And so he's imposing a certain idea influenced by the mode of passion onto a situation and coming up with the wrong sort of inspiration and or at least the wrong sort of understanding of things. So if someone is learning the shastras and he speaks, and someone's like, well, I didn't find that spiritually motivating. Well, we might ask the question, well, why not? What do you find to be spiritually motivated? What's your basis for which you become spiritually motivated? And usually you find out that most people's motivation has nothing to do with anything that has connection with spiritual substance. Oftentimes it is the case. Now, it is also possible, I'm acknowledging that your point also, that someone may be very learned, but maybe not having spiritual potency to inject that essences into others. But then someone else who has imbibed the essence, that means he must have heard from someone who knew what the essence is. They've heard from someone and they have imbibed that essence. Although they may not have expansive awareness of all the various nuanced points of the shastras, but they have understood the essence because they've heard from their guru who imbibed the essence and who perhaps was learning in shastra also. And they somehow they've been empowered by living that those essences. They live those essences of shastra. Been empowered to inject that into others. That is highly possible, certainly. But then we still understand that they've empowered others to understand those essences, which are all coming from shastra. All the shastra is, what is the shastra? That's another thing that should be understood. All the shastra is are the words of great souls who've imbibed the essences. That's what the shastra is basically compiled of. So to say that someone doesn't get inspiration from the shastra, but gets inspiration from someone who's compiled that, who understood the essence, is somewhat contradictory, because all the shastra is are the words of great souls. That's the whole stuff. And so you may not have been able to determine what those essences are just by reading them, but then you would have to hear from someone who has understood those things. So in that way, I'm trying to harmonize both points.
So I guess my follow-up question would be, how does one choose a candidate who more or less, I don't know, maybe I'm coming from a lower standpoint and thinking, but like, who kind of fits that psychophysical nature where we brought this up in one class when we were studying Jiva Dharma, how one has to be submissive to someone who they're willing to take instruction from. So maybe someone that may be learning they have the understanding and, you know, the acumen is there, but you may not be so willing to take instruction from that person.
I would say if that's how you're feeling, then minimally I would say you should get education from them. You may not, I always like to, in my own perhaps way of thinking of things, I tend to think of spiritual discussions as two parts. One part is inspirational and one part is educational. And both are important because you need inspiration to move. Without inspiration, you won't do anything. But without education, what will be your movement? Your movement will be uninformed and therefore dangerous or misconceived. So therefore, you need two parts. There's like always kind of like these two parts, inspirational and educational. And therefore, if you're hearing from persons that you don't find yourself being spiritually motivated, that may be okay, but at least minimally, you can get educational education from such persons. What are they speaking about? What are the points of shastra that they're covering? And because you need that education, it's absolutely necessary. Then, although I may not be finding myself totally inspired by them spiritually, they have something to offer to me, which is invaluable, in the form of education. And I often, you know, your question, how do I choose, you know, an individual whom I can be completely submissive to? That could take a lot of time. You know, although oftentimes when we join up, we're kind of like, we always hear about the importance of accepting guru. And basically you're considered somewhat non-serious until you do accept a guru. But the reality is that it may take some time for you to really come to that conclusion. So in the meantime, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta recommends two points that I always like to point out. Point number one is that you have to study your own heart to see what is motivating your wanting to take shelter of a guru. Oftentimes in an institutional community like our own, the motivation is that everyone's putting pressure on me, that you need a guru as soon as possible, otherwise you're not really connected, you're not really doing Krishna consciousness. And the first question they ask you is, who's your guru? And then you say, well, I don't have a guru. And then they say, well, you need a guru, otherwise you're not worthy to be spoken to, you know, and so on. Not that they think like that, but this does come up sometimes. So you might have to study the nature of your own heart. First of all, why do I need a guru? Right? Because really the acceptance of a guru is based on one's inner necessity. So if he has no inner necessity for spiritual life, why would he accept guru? That acceptance of guru will just be for show. You call it, figurehead guru. I mean, figurehead guru, just someone you put picture on the bed, coffee table in your house, and say, that's my guru. You don't follow what he says. You don't care what he says also. But because everyone said I should have a guru, so I have a guru. Then that is a useless thing. So you have to study the nature of your heart. Why do I want a guru? What is my inner necessity? You know, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Tasma gurum prapadyeta jignasu shaya uttamam. That therefore, you should take shelter of a guru and inquire about your highest necessity from him. And the word, I often mention this point, that the word tasmad in this verse refers, the word tasmad means therefore. And so you don't start a sentence off with therefore. Like, I didn't open my class with therefore, because you need some context. So the context of this tasmad, therefore, means after realizing the futility of material sense enjoyment, after you've come to appreciate that this is completely useless, therefore, go to a guru and inquire about your highest necessity from him. And you, in other words, unless you've realized the futility of material sense gratification, you may not be able to do the second part with any sincerity and real faith, accepting a guru, inquiring about your highest welfare. And indeed, many people accept gurus without realizing the futility of material sense gratification. And we remain attached, and therefore we can't follow what our guru says. So therefore, we become show bottle. We want to be showcased, but you know, oftentimes we're show bottle. So this is one point. You have to study the nature of your heart. And the second point is get education. Like, become educated on what are the actual truths of Krishna consciousness. You know, what are the shastras? And that you can get from practically anyone. Not anyone, you know, let's say anyone in Sampradaya. Although you may not find yourself always spiritually inspired by them, they can provide the resources you need in the form of sound vibration and education, by which you can understand more and more what is your responsibility as a human being. And that way, their help is invaluable as well, although I don't get the inspiration. And as you've studied your heart and you're getting educated and you're becoming a little bit more refined, then you may be able to see that this is a person that I'm finding the most inspiration from, etc. And there's some basis for that inspiration also. You're educating yourself more and more and more. So there's some basis. Otherwise, your basis is just whatever's going on in your mind, which, you know, conditioned as we are, may not be so useful for us. Okay, anything else? Shravan Prabhu, you want to say anything? Otherwise, I'll move on to the next one. Okay, next verse then. Text number 13. I'll just go to text number 15 in there, I think. Antardeheshu Bhutanam Atmaste Haririshvara Sarvam Tadishnam Ikshadvam Evam Vastushito Yasau. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated as the super soul within the cores of the hearts of all living entities, whether moving or not moving, including men, birds, animals, trees, and indeed all living entities. Therefore, you should consider every body a residence or temple of the Lord. By such vision, you will satisfy the Lord. You should not angrily kill these living entities in the forms of trees. Purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita and confirmed by all the Vedic scriptures, Ishvara Sarvabhutadnam Hridayeshe Arjuna Tishtati. The super soul is situated within everyone's heart. Therefore, since everyone's body is the residence of the Supreme Lord, one should not destroy the body because of unnecessary envy. That will dissatisfy the super soul. Soma told the Prachetas that because they had tried to satisfy the super soul, now they should not displease him. This seems like it could be an example of Beta also. I think it was an example of Soma. Beta means there's a consequence in your actions. The consequence being here is that the Supreme Lord will be displeased with you. Earlier on, you've pleased the Supreme Lord. You performed tapasya underneath the waters for 10,000 years. The Supreme Lord came to you, and he very implicitly expressed his pleasure with your activities. Particularly, he expressed how the Prachetas had cooperated with each other in order to perform this austerity for pleasing their father, and that had pleased him very much. And so he gave them so many benedictions. So here, Soma is saying, now you should not displease the Lord. How would I displease the Lord? Well, because everyone's body is a residence place for the Supreme Lord in the form of Paramatma, the super soul. He's residing in the heart of all living entities in spite of their body. So since every body, see that everybody can be one word, since every space body, every body is a residence of the Supreme Lord in this form of Paramatma, to attack these living entities is to attack the home of the Supreme Lord. It's just like to attack a temple. You know, you don't want to desecrate a temple by, you know, attacking it or trying to destroy it. So in the same way, you should not kill living entities unnecessarily, seeing that their bodies are actually the home of the Supreme Lord in his form of super soul. And if you do so because of excessive envy, then you will displease the Supreme Lord. And that's a consequence of your action. And in this way, he's trying to persuade them from not doing the action through the pacification known as Beta. Beta. Any questions about this particular point? It's interesting. The reason I have this third canto sitting up here is because there's a similar idea mentioned by Kapila Dev in the third canto, which is very nice. I thought we might look at it together in relationship to this particular point being brought up. Do you all want to look at this? It's a very nice section in the Bhagavatam. It speaks about, it may help to augment our application of Trinada Pisani Chena, Torori Vasahishuna, why we should respect all living entities. Because their bodies are the homes of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, everyone is worthy of respect. And the Supreme Lord also sees everyone with equal vision. He doesn't hate anyone. He doesn't care for anyone as such. In other words, he's neutral. Samoham sarvabhuteshu amedushasinapriya. And that although the Supreme Lord, he understands the karmas of the living entities, and so according to their karmas, he gives them. But it's not that he's hating one person who has bad karmas or liking someone who has good karmas. He's just giving according to their own activities. But he sees everyone with equality. Similarly, vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihashchini shunin chaiva shopake cha pandita samadarshina, those who have realized the super souls in the heart of everyone, they also have the same vision as the Supreme Lord. So they can see that the living entity who has been impious has been born in lower sorts of life forms, like animals, species, and so on. And they can see that the brahmana who has not misused his free will previously has gotten a higher body. But despite seeing these differences according to the different karmas of the jivas, in his heart he sees everyone with equality. They're all just jivas, you know, bewildered by the material nature. So that's a form of equal seeing. They're all ignorant. He sees with equal vision. They're all ignorant. Or they're all jiva souls, bewildered by the material nature, of course. So those who worship the Supreme Lord but don't have that equal vision, then their worship is useless. Understand? They may worship Supreme Lord, but they don't see with this equal vision, then their worship is a useless thing, actually. That Kapila Dev says, so that's why I thought we could see that section. It's just a nice little section, a few verses. And we can go through third canto number 3, chapter 29, text number 22, starting with text number 22. It would be nice to say the Sanskrit because it's purifying. Y'all pull it up. Yo mam sarveshu bhuteshu santam atmanam ishwaram hitvarcham bhajate modhyad basmanyeva johotisa. Okay, translation. One who worships the deity of Godhead in the temples but does not know that the Supreme Lord is Paramatma, is situated in every living entity's heart, must be in ignorance, and is compared to one who offers oblations into ashes. Oblations into ashes. What are you saying what to? Shravana, he has these like spontaneous like outbursts quite a bit. We were in the Ishopanishad class the other day, and it says the Supreme Lord reserves the right not showing himself to those who do not worship him. And Shravana said, "Jai," just out of nowhere, and everyone started laughing for like 5 minutes. You know, he has these like just sudden outbursts of emotion, just like now what? Yes, this is a very strong point. Kapila Dev is making a very strong point. He says, Yo mam sarveshu bhuteshu, this is Kapila Dev is speaking. So he's saying, Yo ma, I'm in the heart of everyone, santam atmanam ishram, as the paramatma, hitwa. Hitwa means one who does not disregard that point. They know this point also, but they disregard it. Just like Christians, for example, they say that everyone is a child of God. But then they disregard that point and they're condemning so many people with such harsh language. But they disregard it. They know that point, but they disregard. Similarly, devotees, we say the Supreme Lord is in the heart of everyone, but then we will find fault with each other, criticize each other, fight with each other. So we know that point, but we disregard it. So hitwa, yomam sarveshu bhuteshu santam atmanam ishwaram hitwa. They disregard the point that the Supreme Lord is in the heart of everyone as paramatma, archam bhajate modya. But they worship the deity. Govinda's prayers, everyone's looking so sincere. So sincere, Govinda's prayers. The Supreme Lord knows. Like I always think like this sometimes when we're all offering prayers for the deity. So I always think, Nitai's like, Gore, look at this. look at it. He actually thinks we believe that. Anyway, because he's putting some effort forward, I'll give him some credit, you know. And then I always, sometimes we think the Supreme Lord is smiling, but actually laughing. He's laughing because we're so, insincere, actually, so much insincerity. We're worshiping deity, but disregarding his presence in the heart of everyone. Then, although he worships the deity, Archam Bhajate Modya, Bas, this says here, yeah, Basmani Eva Jahoti Saha. That worship is just like offering oblations into ashes. You offer oblations into a burning fire. If fire is finished, only ashes remain, and then you offer ghee, then what is the use of such offering? So similarly, what is the use of such worship if you disregard the presence of the Supreme Lord in the heart of everyone? Next verse. This is a very nice section. Yeah. The No. I mean, why are you asking? Because you said it's in relationship? The whole chapter is in relationship, and I don't want to cover all this. Okay, so you can study it and be happy. Next verse. Dushita parakaye imam mani no bhinadarshina bhuteshu bhadavairasya namana shantim richati. One who offers me respect. Manina. One who offers me respect but is envious of the bodies of others, Dushita Parakaye, and is therefore a separatist, Vinadarshinaha, seeing everything with a separate vision, never attains peace of mind, Namana Shantimrichati, because of his inimical behavior towards other living entities. Bhadavairasya. Understand? This is a very nice verse. He, mani no mam, so he offers respect to Krishna, dushita parakaye, but he is envious of the bodies of other living entities. In other words, he's not seeing spirit soul, he's seeing the bodies. Because what irritates us is not the spirit soul that irritates us. We haven't even access to the spirit soul, in fact. What irritates us are the gross and subtle bodies of living entities. So Dushita Parakaya, he's envious of the bodies of living entities, showing some envy towards them, but offering respect to the Supreme Lord, Bhinadarshinaha, because of this separate vision, not seeing them in relationship to the Absolute, Namana Shantam Richata, his mind never becomes peaceful, because he is always envious of other living entities. Envy practically manifests itself as competition, competing. So when you're envious of someone, that competitive spirit, even to the point of wanting to cause harm to another living entity so that your position can be maintained. That's how envy actually manifests. So how can your mind be peaceful? Suppose you're envious. Suppose you did some service, some cooking service. Did some cooking. No one glorified you. No one even said anything. In fact, most of the thing you cooked was left over. And then another devotee, he cooked something, and everyone's glorifying him right in front of you. They've ate in every single preparation there. And they said, man, Prabhu, you should really be the cook. I don't know who's normally cooking for us, but you should really be the cook. And they're saying right in front of you, then how do you feel? Ecstatic, isn't it? You said, this is going to help my trinada peace with you, trinada. You feel very envious, isn't it? You're burning up with envy. And when you're envious, your mind cannot be peaceful. Isn't it? When you sleep, you'll be dreaming about it, those things. In fact, we often mention this. If 100 people glorify you, but one person just offers you some feedback, it's not even a criticism, it's just a feedback, only that thing you will remember. You'll not remember 100 people glorifying you, what they said also, that doesn't even touch your heart. One little feedback and you'll be bewildered for months together. Months, you'll be bewildered. Isn't it? For months, your mind will be bewildered just because of a little bit of feedback. So therefore, he says, this is actually a very practical point. Your mind will not become peaceful. Because of that separatist outlook, you don't see that everyone is working for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. For example, suppose you'd like to sing kirtan, but you don't have a very nice voice, isn't it? Your voice is not very nice. So someone, they put your name on a list for kirtan, but there's someone who has better voice came, they said they're going to sing the kirtan now, Prabhu, okay? They will actually do the kirtan. Then you feel envious inside, you know, you hope that devotee cracks or something in the middle of the kirtan, a note cracks so everyone would laugh at them or something like that. You were wishing them harm. But if you were actually not abhinna darshina, not seeing with a separate vision, seeing that everything is for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So we want to give the Supreme Lord the best sense gratification. And because this person sings best, they are the best for this service, actually. If you didn't have that separate vision, then you would not feel any envy whatsoever. You would say, oh, this someone is better has come. They can better satisfy the senses of the Supreme Lord. They shall only do it. In fact, I will go and search out such a person. My name came on a list, but I'm not a good singer. Let me go find out such a person because I want to give pleasure to the Supreme Lord's senses, topmost pleasure. For example, you may say, well, what about the bhakti element? Don't go into that super, just making a simple point. The point is that if that separate vision wasn't there, that envy wouldn't be there. There, and your mind will be peaceful. And because that darshina, due to the separate vision, mind is not peaceful. Thinking out of cause harm to other living things. So next verse. Kapila Dev says, Aham ucha vachair dravyai kriya yot panaya nake naiva tushye chitor chayam bhuta grama vamaninaha. My dear mother, even if he worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia, that's the second line, kriyaya utpanaya, a person who is ignorant of my presence in all living entities never pleases me by the worship of my deities in the temple. So the same point he's making. Never pleases me. Next verse. Archada vachayatavad Ishwaram mam swakarma krit. So there's no karma. Okay. Yavana Veda Swahridhi Sarva Bhutesh Shravastitam. Okay, I get it. So performing his prescribed duties, one should worship the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead until one realizes my presence in his own heart and in the hearts of other living entities as well. So Yavan, Yavan, Naveda Swahridhi, as long as one does not know the Supreme Lord is in his own heart, Swahridhi, Sarva Bhuteshu Avastitam, and he does not know that he's in the heart of other living entities, then Ishwara Mam Swakarma Krit, according to his prescribed duties, he should continue to worship the deity until he becomes sufficiently purified. So although it was said earlier his worship is useless, it's not completely useless. It means it's useless in terms of the Lord being satisfied with you. And in terms of that, it is useless. But in terms of his power to purify you, it is not useless. You go on worshiping me until you gain this realization. You go on worshiping the deity according to the proper prescribed duties. It's just like when Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakti prayachate. I've mentioned this. Prayata atmanaha. If you offer even one flower, one fruit, one cup of water, one leaf with devotion, with bhava, then I will accept it. Prayata atmanaha means with a pure mind. So if you offer with a pure mind even one little thing, I'll be very much satisfied with you. I accept that. I am very pleased with you. Even if the offering is insignificant, but because of the devotion. In other words, Krishna eats bhakti. Understand? He eats bhakti. He doesn't eat leaf or a flower or fruit. He eats bhakti. Understand? So when you offer it with that bhakti, it is that bhakti that he's eating. There you go. Bhava grahi janardana. He eats the bhava. You offer with devotion. With pure mind, you offer this to me, even if it's a very insignificant offering, I eat that bhakti. And that bhakti tastes good. Yes, it tastes very good. I like it. But in the next verse, he says, yat karoshi, yarashnashi, yashdahoshi, dadasiyat. That whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, you should give it to me. In that verse, he doesn't express that he accepts that. He just says, you should give it to me. Why? Because it's good for you. It may not be with topmost devotion. In fact, that verse is describing a mixed form of devotion. But because it purifies you, you shall offer it to me anyway. So it may not be useful in terms of bringing pleasure to the Supreme Lord, but it's useful in terms of our own self-purification. So similarly, this verse is saying, earlier it said if you worship the deity with the separate vision, that's like offering ghee into ashes, useless. But it's not useless in terms of its power to purify you. So if you act according to your prescribed duty and go on worshiping this way, then you will gain that realization. The Supreme Lord is in your heart and the heart of others. At that time, Supreme Lord will become pleased with you. Understand? That's the verse saying here. Next verse. Jiva Shrishta Hya Jivanam. Oops, I think I missed something. Yeah, I missed a verse here, sorry. So it's text 26, excuse me. Atmanascha parasyapi ya karotyanto, oops, ya karotyantorodaram tasya binantrisho mrityur vidadhe bhayam ulbhanam. As the blazing fire of death, I cause great fear to whoever makes the least discrimination between myself and other living entities because of a differential outlook. So if Binandrisho, again, the same word coming, he sees I am different from others just because of looking at external bodies instead of saying that we are all one and that we are all conscious living entities. The oneness is not in terms of an ontological one. Well, it's not in terms of an ontological oneness, like we're one without distinction, but it's in terms of a category. Just like we may all drive different cars, but we're all one on the platform of humanity. In other words, we're all humans. Although we're driving different cars, we may have different sorts of wealth. So someone's driving a really nice car, someone's driving a really bad car. But we're all human beings driving the car. So it's a oneness in terms of the category. We're all humans. So similarly, we're all one in terms of an ontological category. We're all living entities. And we have different bodies according to our different karmas. But because of Binandrisho, we see only the car, but not the oneness in terms of a category. If one shall see in that way, making such distinction, vidadhe bhayam ubanam. Krishna causes fear in the heart of such a person. Yes. It says here, he causes great fear, bayam ubanam, great fear to come in their heart because of such a position. Next verse, this is the concluding verse of this little section here. Antamam sarvabhuteshu bhutatmanam kritalayam. Okay. Arhayat dhanamanabhyam. No, no, okay. My Therefore, through charitable gifts, dana, and attention, manabhyam, respect, as well as through friendly behavior, maitriya, and by viewing all to be alike in terms of the category, as I just mention chakshushaha, viewing all to be the same, one should propitiate me, arhayat, who abide in all creatures as their very self. Such a nice verse. How to worship the Supreme Lord in the heart of everyone. How you can worship the Supreme Lord in the heart of everyone and thus please the Supreme Lord. 4 points given. Dana, by gift giving. By gift giving, you worship the Supreme Lord in the heart of everyone. Manabhyam, by offering them respect, being respectful to all living entities. Maitra, by friendship. And Abhinna Chakshushaha, seeing that we're all actually one in terms of an ontological category. We're all one. In this way, you can worship the Supreme Lord in the heart of everyone. I like how Prabhupada translates the word manabhyam here. He translates the word as attention, which impacted me a lot several years ago when I first heard this verse. Consciously heard this verse. And just by giving attention to living entities, you can worship the Supreme Lord in the heart of everyone. Sometimes I experience this most of the time I experience this. When we have like festivals or Sunday feasts or something, and someone wants to speak to you, you can see they really want to talk to you, but you really want to do something else. Then you find yourself in a existential crisis. Okay, he obviously wants someone to talk to right now. Should I not? It's between eating my prasadam in peace or hearing this person's issues or whatever it looks like that's on his mind. Tough call. Prasadam it is. Usually because we're not thinking in this way that how to worship the Supreme Lord in the heart of everyone. I remember seeing, this happened to me in Chaupati, 2007. There was one young boy there. His name is Chaitanya at the time. And now his name is Chaitanya Charan. But he was a young boy, like 16-year-old boy. And he was looking really miserable. And I was going upstairs to take rest. So I saw his face. And I had some interaction with him earlier. And when I saw his face, I was like, oh, no, nah, that looks like at least an hour. At least an hour. So I went upstairs to take rest. And then I took out my, we have like mosquito nets, these cool mosquito nets, like portable mosquito nets. Pulled out my mosquito nets, set up my bed stuff, and I laid down. But then as I closed my eyes, his face kept coming in my mind. So I felt a little bad, you know. And just that morning, I had heard that verse, this verse about the fourth, and I had really appreciated it. So I was like, okay, maybe this is the opportunity to put this verse into action. You know, by attention, you can worship the Supreme Lord. So I went back downstairs, and he was still there moping, you know, 10 minutes later. So I was like, Prabhu, what's wrong? What's going on? So then he started telling me what was wrong. Something to do with school. He wasn't doing well in school and so on. And so I was trying to encourage him, and I spent 1 hour. Like, I knew, you know, I had guessed it right. It took about 1 hour. And then after that, he was so inspired by that little show of friendship, little show of attention, that he started coming to the temple every day, which he wasn't doing at the time. Every day for Mangalarti, he was coming. And he used to stand right next to me. And whenever I go, he would follow me, you know? Like, literally, it was literally like this. And when I had to go to the bathroom, I said, Prabhu, you have to wait right here. You can't come to me with the bathroom, you know? He got so, like, super attached to me. He started chanting 16 rounds. And, you know, following Krishna consciousness. And I didn't go back to Chaupati until 2 years later. And when I got to Chaupati, they sent this boy to come pick me up from the train station, because I was coming from Vrindavan to Chaupati that time. And they sent this boy to come pick me up because they knew how attached he had become to me because of that. And even now, when I go to Chaupati, we spend a lot of time together. We hang out and so on. Also, anyway, so my point is that just by this, because I was inspired by that verse to spend time with him. And it really kind of worked and inspired his Krishna consciousness to, not fully, obviously, but it inspired him to become more serious about sadhana, to chant. He later on took initiation and so on. So just by a little bit of respect and attention, charity, friendship, you worship the Supreme Lord in the heart of everyone. So then the prachetas are telling the same here too. Soma is telling the same to the prachetas that the Supreme Lord is in the heart of everyone. You should not displease the Supreme Lord by this differential outlook, but you should rather please the Supreme Lord by seeing all alike, etc. Nice points from him. Any, you want to ask, say something? Okay. I really wanted to get a little further, but.
So, Prabhu, regarding this point of differentiation and feedback thing, so how to understand and how to be receptive? Because there is often a tendency to differentiate the things in the ashram also, and we often differentiate, okay, he is my friend, he is my superior, he is my inferior, or that. And according to that degree of divisions, we try to be receptive to some feedback and try to be not receptive to other feedback.
Oh, whoa. So, it's not like the Madhyamadikaris see with distinctions also, isn't it? they see distinctions between different types, levels of Vaishnavas. Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta. You know this verse from the Akram instruction. So the Madhyam Adhikaris see distinctions amongst different levels of Vaishnavas. They have such maturity without finding fault and committing offenses. They see distinctions amongst different living entities. You know, these living entities should be neglected, upeksha, because they're envious of the Supreme Lord and his devotees. This living entity is ignorant, he needs kripa. This living entity is a devotee, that's my friend. This living entity, the Supreme Lord, is worthy of worship. So they see distinction amongst living entities. They see distinctions amongst different levels of Vaishnavas also. So it's not that that won't be manifested in a certain level of Vaishnava, that discrimination, capacity to discern is going to be there. But the point that was being made is that the differential outlook is based on material bodies. The discernment of Amandam Adhikari is not based on material bodies. It's based on spiritual principles. This one is envious of the Supreme Lord. And I don't have the capacity to accommodate that within my level of consciousness. If I try to preach to him and he's envious, I'll start to get trapped in the Lord modes of nature. You see that all the time with neophyte devotees. They go on book distribution and they meet a Christian for the first time and in their new status as a devotee. And they're not used to that hatred coming at them at full force like that. So then they try to preach to the Christian, try to make him see the light and all these sorts of... Both parties are neophytes, individuals. And so they go on arguing. Sometimes they get into fights. It even gets physical sometimes. Neophyte means that, you know, looking for a fight. So in that way, you try to preach to someone without the consciousness to accommodate that level of envy. And the thing is, it tends to bring you down to whatever level you're on or whatever level you think you're on. So someone like Prahlada Maharaj, she can accommodate those sorts of envious statements and so on without being affected. Whereas if you're on a Madhyam level, you may not be having that same capacity. So therefore, the Madhyam Adhikari will upeksha. He will avoid that type of... Avoid means that he won't discuss spiritual matters with them. Bhaktivinoda Thakur clarifies that in Jiva Dharma. It just means he won't bring up those elements because it'll press too many funny bones. You know, funny bone, is it a funny bone is there? So those types of topics press their funny bones so that you don't mention those things. That's called upeksha. So it's not that the power of discernment isn't there, but the discernment is based on spiritual principles, not on material bodies. So what we heard from Kapila Dev was based on material bodies. Therefore, they're discriminating. Oh, I don't like his gross body. Oh, I don't like his subtle body. That was the whole basis of the discrimination. So then that type of thing is very dangerous. Of course, you can say envy, in one sense, is the subtle body of the living entity. But the consideration is not because he's envious alone. It's because of where the envy is directed and the consequences of that for him and for that individual. So he avoids. Is this, yes, a spiritual consideration? Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things that our institution is very good at is bringing people to Krishna consciousness.
I think they're good at keeping them also. Maybe not the best, but there are a lot of people in ISKCON after all.
There are a lot of people in ISKCON.
So it's not that we do such a bad job of keeping people either.
True. My question has to do with, you know, you see young devotees make a lot of advancement if they get some attention from a senior devotee. And that senior devotee kind of takes them under their wing or something like that. Mm-hmm. Is that necessarily true for everyone?
No.
Or is it not?
Definitely not. People's capacity to digest mercy has a lot to do with their sukriti also. It's like sometimes you speak, I've seen this many times actually, you'll speak something about to someone who's completely new, you have to just surrender to Krishna, dedicate your whole life to him. And they're like, that makes perfect sense. I'm like, the hell it does. It doesn't make any sense. For a conditioned soul to surrender everything to Krishna does not make sense. So if you meet someone, you speak all the heaviest points possible. You got to dedicate all your 24 hours to Krishna, give up all this nonsense stuff. And they're like, that makes perfect sense. Okay, they got some sukriti. That's allowing them to digest that sort of those sorts of points. You have other persons who may have been brought into Krishna consciousness in a different sort of way. That type of strong approach wasn't given in the beginning. So they got started, but then when they hear a class like that, what is this nonsense going out for playing sports? They start hearing sort of messages like this. You should just surrender everything to Krishna. And they get a little bit like, whoa, that person's like fanatical. Their sukriti isn't as much, where they can just hear such a strong message of Sharanagati. They like to hear things that seem more well-balanced, you know. Whereas when you say, just give everything to Krishna right today, everyone's like, hurry, go! And that one individual's in the back like, this is like a cult, you know, and he's like really concerned. So he has a little bit less bhakti sukriti to digest that sort of thing. So people's ability to digest mercy is not just on the basis of someone spending so much time with them. But it has a lot to do with their sukriti. Now, this isn't the case of a sadhaka, even an advanced sadhaka. Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about different categories of devotees and their empowerment to give Krishna consciousness. So he says for sadhakas, either on the path of Vaidhi Bhakti or on the path of Raghunuga Bhakti, Sadakas really only have the power to instill faith, and that too, if the person has sufficient sukriti, and they're doing so by their proper example and their proper teaching, speaking. So that's their empowerment. So they have to follow nicely. These are for sadhakas, either on the path of Vairi Bhakti or the path of Raghunanga Bhakti. They have to have a good example. They have to speak properly. And the individuals they speak to have to have sufficient sukriti. That's the extent of their empowerment, if they're sadhakas. If they're bhav bhaktas, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, just by their personality, they can bring any sadhaka to the stage of bhava and any materialist to the stage of ruchi, if they have sufficient sukriti. So even for the bhav bhakta, the sukriti of the individual plays a role in it. But it doesn't mention about his good example per se. It just says by his personality, he can inspire people to these higher levels of devotion, just by his personality alone. And you get a sense of that when you see certain personalities within our ISKCON or otherwise, how they were able to inspire people just by their personality. They didn't even have to speak much to them. Such is the position of a bhav bhakta. And for the premium bhakta, he has unlimited power. He can do whatever he wants. You know, just anyone who's just total ignorance, no contact with spiritual life previously, he has the ability to just, you know, it's not exactly like electric shock, but it's something like that. You know, his prema bhakti shakti, and he just, by contact with him, he can insert so much inspiration. Of course, those individuals have to avoid offenses and other things which could block their receptivity. So my point is that people's ability to digest is not just based on the attention given by devotees, especially if they're sadhakas. That's not the only factor. The other factor is people's own devotional sukriti from previous lives, their ability to digest whatever mercy is coming their way. Okay, you can ask, then we'll close out so we can lift the bulk up.
The preaching point of view, I was thinking, in the five example, one means the protection given by the Lord to the devotees is missing. Means here there are five examples is given that how one person is giving protection to another person.
Mm-hmm.
So that the protection given by the God to the devotees is missing in that this particular five examples.
Okay, we'll tell Soma Prabhu, you missed one.
No, so that's what I'm asking. Is it because he was angry?
No, Soma isn't angry, right? Soma's trying to pacify the Prachetas.
Yes. So he didn't quote this example either.
Because that would make them more mad?
Yes, I mean, either he was angry or he does not have that adhikar to
appreciate. Of course he has that adhikar. And I don't know why Soma didn't make that point. If I see him, I'll ask him for you and let you know what he says. I mean, in other words, I don't know. So you wanted to say something?
And the aspect of seeing the Lord within all living beings' hearts. For me, it's easier to see the Lord in the heart of, like, innocent animals, you know, I'm walking down the street or something, rather than, like, in a human being that has so many subtle, like, things, I mean, or something like that.
Yeah.
So how can one try to advance and to see past these subtle qualities and see the Lord.
And the simple answer is self-discovery. That's what the process of Krishna consciousness is all about. We have this Gita Nagari thing is coming up about self-acceptance and with who you are and trying to make progress from there. That's kind of the idea. But as I was meditating on this topic every now and again, more and more, I was thinking actually self-acceptance is tantamount to the process of self-discovery. You can't really accept yourself if you don't know who you are. So in order to really be self-accepting, you have to discover yourself, the journey of self-discovery. We distribute a book like that, right? So self-acceptance really requires self-discovery, which is the process of Krishna consciousness. What we actually call ourselves is actually the non-self, and we don't really want to be too accepting of that. Prabhupada's language in the Ishopanishads, we'll hear that today, is learning how to make the best use of a bad bargain. You know, what we normally think of as ourself is just a result of our karmas fructifying. And that is, Krishna doesn't speak about that so much in terms of self-acceptance as he does in terms of tolerance and transcending. So learning how to tolerate, you know, this is what it is, this is what I have to work with. and from there offering myself to the Supreme Lord for transcending it. And so if I haven't yet to discover myself, we can hardly think that I'll be having understanding of others also. So really, your question in simple language is that we need to discover ourselves. Who are we in truth? And we know what we know what we are in falsity, in asat. We know we have access to the impressions of who we think we are. That's what we know. We know the impressions of who we think we are. But we don't really know ourselves. And because we're devotees and we're hearing Krishna consciousness philosophy, we know theoretically that we're spirit souls different from matter, which is true for all living entities. But because I've yet to realize that in myself, I've yet to realize that in others also. So how can we realize that all living entities are one on an ontological category, as I was mentioning earlier? It requires self-discovery. That's what Sadhana Bhakti is all about. And without making advancement in Krishna consciousness, there will be no question of these sorts of visions of reality, this pratyaksha, this direct perception of what is the actual truth of things. So we have to advance ourselves in Krishna consciousness. There is no, as Ramapada Maharaj was saying to me for almost a year, for every question I asked, there is no substitute for maturity in Krishna consciousness. You know, the idea of these verses in Bhagavatam is to help us kind of sublimate an unhealthy mentality with a positive mentality, and with that controlled mind moving forward in Krishna consciousness. Because if you have this negative mentality that all are separate from me, they're all different from me, you're envious of them, that mindset itself blocks progress. So then you hear these messages, and by hearing those messages, you sublimate the negative mindset with a positive mindset. It's not a realization, though. It's just a mental acceptance of a positive mindset. And that positive mindset helps you to move forward in Krishna consciousness. In other words, it increases the influence of goodness in you, in your mind. And by that increased influence of goodness, that helps you to move forward in Krishna consciousness until you gain direct perception of these truths. But hearing these messages in and of themselves don't give us a realization. We obviously know that. But they help us to battle the negative mindsets. You know, when we start thinking in terms of this separate vision, we've heard this message from Bhagavatam, so we say, no, that's not right. And so we can, by our intelligence, kind of tackle those negative mindsets, kick them out, adopt a proper mindset that increases goodness in our mind, that helps us to propel forward until we enter into the realm of direct perception of what the actual truth is. So otherwise, there's no question of seeing these people like this. Their idiosyncrasies are too much, isn't it? Too much. It's a menagerie.
So just to clarify, by learning to see the Lord within my own heart, then I can see.
Yes, and how you will see the Lord within your own heart without making progress in Krishna consciousness. All right, y'all. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. What? Yeah, and friendship. Maitri means friendship. Friendly dealings with other consciousness. It's a very powerful verse, actually. In terms of